Chapter 18, Section 1. And the big idea here is economic systems. And an economic system is the way in which a society organizes the production and consumption of goods and services. And how is that organized in our country? So a few terms that we're going to learn about today. Some are simple, some are technical. Number one, need. What is a need versus a want? Obviously, I'll be trying to define economics since we're jumping into that portion of the course. Economics can be broken up into two whole courses. If you take this at the college level, you'll see microeconomics is usually the second part that is dealing with economics on the small scale. And then macroeconomics, which we'll be looking at both parts in this course, which is looking at economics on the big scale. You'll see examples of economic models, systems, and we'll certainly be talking about resources and the scarcity of those resources. So lots of big stuff today. Now, again, you'll see a number of academic terms like rational, capable, and generate. And so I believe that economics is important for all of our students to understand and gain a decent understanding of. Because whether you understand it or not, politicians make decisions that affect the health and wealth of our economy. And economics is a key part of a political process that many people don't even consider when making decisions to vote. So, what types of economic choices do we face as a society? So, economics is the study of how we make decisions in a world in which resources are limited. As well, it is also the study of how things are made, how they are bought, sold, and then how they are used. We make economic choices every single day, such as needs versus wants. So what is a need? A need is a requirement for survival. This would be food, clothing, shelter. I got a statement from Chase Bank recently saying that our escrow account needed funds. An escrow account is a certain amount taken out of your mortgage each month that goes to taxes at the end of the year. We got a statement saying that we're going to have to pay a little more this year. It's non-negotiable. It has to be done. We owe an extra $1,000 on our house this year because of the escrow deficiency. That's $1,000 we don't get to keep. Boom. It went away. It's a need. We don't pay it, we lose our house. So it's got to be done. That's a need. A want was the video game I bought before the trip. I would have survived. I guess I could have read my book or listened to music, but I wanted to play this stupid game, so I bought it. Needs versus wants. So, needs, once more, are required. Wants are luxuries. A want is a thing I would like to have. You know, I would like to have that video game. I would like to go out west again this summer. I would like to have these things. They make my life more fun and enjoyable. But I have to make careful choices when I decide what I want versus what I need. Did I need to go out to eat last night? No, I guess I could have eaten something cheap at home. But I wanted to. I was tired and grumpy, and it cheered me up. So, again, balancing needs versus wants. So, economics is the study of how individuals and nations make choices about ways to use these scarce resources. My wife and I make a finite amount of money. It is predictable. We get it at the end of each month. We then know exactly how much money we have and how much money we have to spend throughout the month. And so we make these economic choices. And the course of economics is the study of these decisions that are made throughout the world. And while we can look at it individually by thinking about our budgets, and we have activities and projects coming up about our budgets, but we can also think about it more broadly by studying how countries manage limited resources. It is also the study of how things are made, how they are bought, how they are sold, and then finally how they are used. In microeconomics, we might look at specialized bikes and the types of mountain bikes and road bikes they produce, how they make them, where they get their aluminum, where they get their rubber, where they get the expertise required to assemble the parts, and the R&D that goes into the new models. And then we look at how they're sold. We could contact specialized bikes in Hendersonville and see if they could send somebody over and talk about the process of selling said bikes. And then we talk about how they're used, and I can bring my bike in, and I can show it to you, and we can take it apart and put it back together. I don't know. We can talk about how it's used. Again, all of those things are encompassed in the study of economics. But a few more terms that I want to define for you. Economic models. An economic model is a representation of the real world that economists use to describe how the economy behaves. So using a model, we can even predict how a product will perform in the future. If you want to go into a business, you need to study a model of similar businesses. Your jelly donut business that you're currently running, if you know that no one wants to buy jelly donuts, well, using that model, no one buys jelly donuts, that's probably a predictor that your business will fail. However, if you're going to go into bikes are very popular. Maybe that's a stable business. Maybe there's room for growth. And so maybe there's room for you to open up a bike shop. The next one is microeconomics. Microeconomics is the study of economic behavior and decision making by individuals and small businesses. I don't know if you've gotten to ride the Gorge Zip Line. I haven't yet myself, but I've heard it's really fun. It's right over there in Saluda, 15 minutes from here. You can hop on a zip line and ride way down into the Green River Gorge. I worked for that business. I ran a lot of their river trips back when they were just a tiny little family-owned shop that ran limited amounts of trips on the upper and lower Green Rivers. And I used to work for them. The year after I left, they expanded and opened up the Gorge Zip Line. It's huge. It's a multi-million dollar investment that has made them lots and lots of money. And so now they are a much bigger business. Now you see them and hear them on radio advertisements, on television, on social media. They're all over the place. And so that was a careful economic decision that they made, that they did a lot of careful market research on. They hired a professional to do a market study to see if that type of business would be feasible. And then they invested millions of dollars to build that zip line. And now it makes tons of money. All of that encompasses the study of microeconomics. And then macroeconomics. Macroeconomics is the study of economic behavior and decision making by a government. So just this year, the United States government elected to pass one of the largest tax cuts in the past 30 years. It's a huge deal. And it affects you guys. My check went up by about $40, as did most Americans. Certain people saw bigger increases, certain people saw smaller increases, but the bottom line, it was a significant tax cut. And different people on different sides of the political aisle have various opinions about it. Some are excited about it. Some are very concerned about it. And all of those discussions are encompassed in the field of macroeconomics. So once more, microeconomics is the small picture. Macroeconomics is the big picture. And like we were discussing at the beginning of this chapter, the United States functions on free enterprise capitalism. That means on the small scale, if one of you were into sewing and you liked knitting blankets and you discovered that people like to buy your blankets, The more of them you can make and the more of them you can sell, kudos. Make as many as you want, sell as many as you want, sky's the limit. All you gotta do is find something that people want, provide that thing, charge money for it, and boom, you have a business. That's called free enterprise capitalism. Well, as you think about economic choices with limited resources, we're really talking about the practical thing here. What is a need versus what is a want? What is something you have to have versus something you could live without but you would really like to have? Because ultimately we're dealing with the problem of scarcity, meaning scarcity of resources force us to make careful decisions with our money. So, since scarcity means not having enough resources to produce all the things we would like to have, meaning that it'd be nice to have all the things, it'd be nice to eat out at fancy restaurants every day, but it's not gonna happen. It would be super nice to go on elaborate fancy vacations every weekend. I'd love to go skiing this weekend, but it's not happening. So I have to deal with a scarcity of resources. And what do I mean by resources? Well, let's define this formally. Resources mean the money, the people, and the materials available to accomplish goals. Ultimately, another word for resources is wealth. Even on the big scale, no country has unlimited resources. Every country has to make economic decisions dealing with scarcity. Even the United States. There's two basic types of resources. There are natural resources, timber, oil, coal, and there are human resources, labor, workers. You know, that's why the employment department of any corporation or public sector is going to be called human resources. You know, have to make choices. They have to balance what to produce versus what not to produce. What they choose to produce must balance the problems that it creates because they're going to have to choose not to produce something as a result versus the benefits that it creates. You know, over the weekend, we had to buy a new washer and dryer. Ours tore up. And so we had to balance. It'd be nice to have the fancy front-loading washers, but in our experience, those tore up a lot. And so while they're quieter and they're energy efficient, that's wonderful. But we wound up buying the 20-year-old model. Why? Because it's time-tested. It's going to hopefully last longer than the old one did. And so that money that we spend on that washer and dryer, we can't have it back. It's spent. You know, it's nearly $1,000 that's gone. But now it's going to be $1,000 we can't spend on other things. And then finally, we have to think about, and as a country we have to think about, who are we producing these things for and how will they be distributed? So if you're going to open up a business, say a bike shop, you've got to think about who is going to patronize you, who is going to shop at your shop. And so where you locate will depend on to what degree you'll be successful. Okay. So resources are certainly limited. And so we have to choose often as a nation, should we provide weapons for defense or improve facilities for those who are sick? Eisenhower once said it best. He said, for every dollar that is spent on defense, that's a dollar that won't go to a hungry child. Section 2. And the big idea here is that economic systems are the way in which a society organizes production and consumption of goods and services. And so today, trade-off, because with any decision there's something that you're missing out on, opportunity cost, which is the formal term for that, of course marginal cost, marginal benefit, and then finally cost-benefit analysis. But the real question that I want to around here is, when you make a decision to engage in some activity or to purchase something, that means some activity or something that you will not be getting as a return. We make those decisions all of the time, and we reflect on those types of decisions all of the time. So we always have to ask, is it worth it? Well, hopefully the process that I'll be teaching you guys today will help you to make better decisions, because really economics is a part of our daily life. So costs and benefits. So first off, to make an informed decision, we have to understand the costs and benefits of any choice that we make. For example, whatever choice we make will produce a trade-off. A trade-off is the alternative that you face if you choose to do one thing over another. You chose to attend this school. Do you ever wonder what it would have been like had you chosen to go to another school? We hope you're happy here, but you can't help but wonder every now and then, what would life have been like had I taken a different path? And I certainly wonder that too. It's just part of the human condition. We worry and we think about what is the trade-off related to that decision. Every individual decision that we make has some degree of trade-off. When I bought my phone, I knew this would be my phone for about 4 years. You know, it wasn't a short-term purchase. I'm definitely buying it and keeping it until it doesn't work anymore. So I'm hoping at least 4 years, maybe more. So that means whatever other phone in the whole wide world I could have gotten won't be happening. And that's a trade-off. I made a trade-off with my phone, but even businesses make trade-offs. When Google chose to purchase YouTube, that was a huge financial decision that they had to carefully weigh the cost of. For example, GE, produces light bulbs and fixtures. They're a nationwide company, and they have a branch here in Henderson County. They're for sale, and they are considering new ownership. And whoever purchases GE is going to have to weigh that decision very carefully using some of the same process that we're going to be looking at. So let's say that Grace decides to purchase GE. It's a big purchase, right? We're talking multi-million dollar purchase. So with that is an opportunity cost. An opportunity cost is the cost of the next best alternative use of time and money when choosing to do one thing rather than another. Now, unless she is Bill Gates, GE would probably be all that she has the resources to do. Now, let's say that a bank agrees to loan her the money to purchase GE. That's another one, right? She's going to have to convince someone to loan her. She's going to be in debt for the rest of her life, perhaps, by purchasing this company. But, of course, it could be a win. She could become the next Henderson County billionaire. Maybe. Or not. Maybe her company would fail. But she had to make that choice with a clear understanding of the alternatives. Of course, these types of decisions involve time and money. Any inconveniences that go into it, for example, when you're buying a car project, if you choose the fancy car, that's wonderful. But that comes with a very expensive payment. It's hard to visualize what that looks like until you have to make a payment. I love my car. I will probably never buy a brand new one again, but I did. And it came with a 4-year fixed interest $585 a month payment. That's a lot of money. For a first year teacher, that was a lot of money. I'll never do it again. Again, love my car. I'm happy it's paid for. I probably should have weighed the opportunity cost of purchasing a brand new car before I did it. So, most decisions involve a trade-off of some type, unless your resources are near infinite, which almost no one has resources. So, again, this is something that people do for a living. Economists make a reasonable salary. You can teach this in academia. You can be a consultant for large firms. My wife was an economist when she managed the books for a large country club. She kept their finances. And so economists develop ways of measuring types of cost. And this gets into budgeting a little bit. So different types of cost that you will experience in your life. Number one, fixed cost. When you make out your budget, whether you choose to do it for your life as it stands now or your dream job in the future, you're going to have to weigh the fixed cost with the variable cost. Fixed costs are going to be once you've decided on the car that you want, are you going to have a payment? That payment for X amount of years is now a fixed cost. So when I made my budget as a first-year teacher, I had my rent, it's $450 a month, utilities, $50 a month, car payment, $585 a month. So off the top of my salary was about $1,200 a month in fixed cost. It hurt. As a first-year teacher, I made right around $2,000 a month after taxes, so that meant that my variable budget was roughly $800 a month. That's what I actually got to play with. It's not a lot when you think about it. That's groceries, that's gas, that's any fun things I want to do. Those were the variable costs that I had to consider. And then finally, total cost. Total cost is the both fixed and variable costs added together. My budget, in terms of total cost, $2,000 a month. It's what I had to live on. It wasn't bad. I mean, I could go out and eat now and then. I could go have a social life, and I still did fun things. But I had to carefully weigh those things against the things I wouldn't get to do. You know, for example, if I met my friends out and we had a nice dinner, then I need to be cautious through the week if I'm going to do that on the weekend. Next is marginal cost. Marginal cost is the additional or extra opportunity cost associated with an action. For example, maybe I'm planning out my weekend. When I'm weighing the marginal cost, I need to think about additional expenses. You know, DC was an awesome trip. It was also expensive. Everywhere we went to eat, the Smithsonian was nearly $20 just to get a decent meal. You know, mall food is not the best, it's not the cheapest. So we had to think about how to account for unintended costs. Next are types of revenue. So, on the business end, total revenue is the number of units sold multiplied by the average price per unit. So with your jelly donuts, if they're $1 a piece and you sell 100 of them, your total revenue is $100. $100, that's what you can count on. $100 a day, $100 every day. Now what businesses also have to account for, is there a way to increase revenue? Is there a way to provide marginal revenue? Because here's the thing, if you know you're gonna sell 100 donuts a day, and you know you're gonna charge $1 per donut, that means you're gonna make $100 per day. It's not a bad living if you're the sole proprietor, if you're the only business owner. You can make a living on $100 a day. What if you could sell 110 donuts per day? Well, guess what, guys? It's still a day's work. You've increased your revenue without increasing the hours that you have to work. That's called marginal revenue. That extra 10 donuts, guys, that's more money you're making without having to work any harder. It's pretty sweet, right? And so that's called marginal revenue. But next we have to think about marginal benefit. You see, when you weigh the marginal cost, if you're going to go on the DC trip, it's going to be $250 to go. It's going to be about $200 worth of food and souvenirs, and then maybe any other marginal cost associated. Maybe you get hurt. Maybe something happens. Maybe you want to really buy that nice thing for yourself. Who knows? But there's also a marginal benefit, and that's the additional or extra benefit associated with an action. You know, maybe you'd never been to DC before. Maybe it's an eye-opening experience. Maybe you went into one of the government buildings and you were like, oh my gosh, I want to work in politics. Maybe you walked by the FBI building and you were like, that's so me someday. And maybe it changed your world. Well, again, that's a marginal benefit, an unintended benefit that came along with that action. And so, careful decision-making involves a cost-benefit analysis. This is an economic model that compares the marginal cost, you know, how can we account for any possible unintended cost, with the marginal benefits. So the more careful we are with the type of decision making, the more we can eliminate unknowns. You know, when I was trying to budget for DC trip, I knew, okay, $250 off the top, okay, that's a fixed cost. We know that's the cost. However, the marginal cost, do I want to eat at the Smithsonian? Gosh, $20 for a cheeseburger and fries, really? Oh yeah. $20, cheeseburger, fries, and a soda. Well, okay. Or I've had students pack their lunch. Totally. You know, shop at Aldi, $50 feeds you for the whole week. If it even costs 50, maybe 40. Versus 40 will get you two meals at the Smithsonian. So, that type of cost-benefit analysis requires some mature decision-making, where you're having to choose and weigh the benefits of a choice over the cost. Now, here's the thing. If you do the math, and you realize that DC is going to cost you almost $450 at the end of the day, and that's not worth it to you, don't do it. If you realize that having that nice new car, say you want a Land Rover, those are really cool. But then you look at the price tag on a Land Rover and you go, wow, it's 50 grand. They're sweet cars, but 50 grand, really? And maybe that doesn't mean anything to you now, but you start to look at what that means on the monthly cost. And maybe it still doesn't mean anything to you. It certainly didn't to me when I got a Subaru. They were like $585 a month, and I was like, sweet. I've never made much money before anyway. Why not? Until I had to live on it. Then I realized. But what I'm trying to teach you is that if you can actually think about those things ahead of time, then maybe you won't lock yourself into a four-year fixed interest rate like I did. So when you can carefully do the cost-benefit analysis, you can actually eliminate unknowns. You can begin to think about what it's going to look like. Okay. So really, cost-benefit analysis is all about making good decisions. When you choose to engage in an activity, is it going to be fun? Awesome. Is that fun worth the risk? Is it? Is it not? Don't know. Right?